Blogtalk.com.
Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
With Jeff Danilek, with Gene and Chris on the Paracast, blaming it on who in 1897? I guess you blamed it on the Italians, but small Italians.
And now, by the way,
we're not insulting Italians. You see, it's a very politically correct society these days. So, you know, I'll give you an example of this. Just a few weeks ago, I started watching these old DVDs of the Dean Martin celebrity roast from the 1970s, and ethnic humor abounded there. They attacked everyone, and everybody had a good time, everybody laughed. Now, if you do it, you're a racist. Whatever happened?
Yeah, we've become PCized.
It's not fun.
Point out the truth.
Chris, you want to pursue this further?
Well, I do. You know, this whole wave of sightings, I think, is extremely underappreciated in the ufological community. Of course, everybody, you know, who's done their research, I'm sure is familiar with it, but I don't think the total scope and the width and breadth of the impact of these sightings is fully appreciated in the field. I mean, we're talking hundreds, if not thousands, of witnesses to these events, and quite a number of, as you pointed out, Jeff, quite a number of very sober, very factual newspaper accounts. This did create quite an uproar in the country, but it died down quickly, as you pointed out. Which of the sighting events do you think were the most impressive or had the most gravitas in terms of newspaper coverage?
Well, I really think that the first ones, the first reports that came out, because they were right out of the blue. You know, you think about it, if this is something that somebody made up, some newspaper made up or something, it's just not the way it happens, where it just suddenly pops out like that. Plus the number of witnesses, like you said, and the degree of the witnesses, including government officials, police chiefs, people saw this thing. But that was what I found interesting about this, was that people didn't really think of this as extraterrestrial for the most part. Most of them assumed it was an inventor, and that's the way it was generally reported a lot in the press. So I think it's a lot of people in our time assume everything that's unexplained is extraterrestrial, but back in those days they were much more practical about these kinds of things, and they didn't jump to conclusions the way we do today, I think.
Well, where do you come down on the infamous Alexander Hamilton sighting the abduction? There actually was an abduction event that was associated with one of these airships, except the occupants of the airship lassoed a calf. I think it was in Kansas or someplace, and dragged the calf off.
Okay, that was actually a hoax, and it was perpetrated by a club that they had actually called the Liars Club. And people actually joined this, and the whole idea was try to outdo the other person with the story, see how many people you could get to buy off on it. So this was later admitted that this was part of the Liars Club, you know, goofing around here. And so that story, which has been used by a lot of debunkers to debunk the whole thing, really it was a hoax. But I don't think you can debunk the whole thing based upon one story like that.
Otherwise, there'd be no UFO mystery.
That's pretty creative, though, to lasso a calf and drag it off as you're flying away.
Well, hey, you know, if you're a member of the Liars Club, you're going to come up with something creative. This was quite a different culture back then. You know, we really don't understand that time, that era, very well. But people, to entertain themselves, they didn't have television, they didn't have radio, they had nothing really but newspapers and storytelling. And so they would come up with very creative stuff. That's where the jackalope came from, and the fur fish, and all these things from the 1800s. And these people were very clever, very creative. And so there is a degree of joking going on with this whole phenomena. But I think that doesn't explain the entire phenomena, although it does explain bits and pieces of it.
Yeah, I knew a fur fish in college.
But remember, Chris went to college back in 1896.
That was his sixth year of college.
Well, it took him 60 years to go past the first year. It was really troublesome. He's not saying anything. He's just ignoring me.
Well, yeah, I shouldn't have said that.
You jumped into it. You got your way into it. Okay, let's look at other cases, 1897. Any other really, really compelling cases you want to tell us about?
Well, I thought it was interesting. Supposedly there is a photograph, or was a photograph taken of the airship over Chicago on the morning of April 11th, 1897. Now, the photograph apparently was in such poor shape that they made a sketch from it, and I have that in my book. It appeared in the newspaper. But that would be really interesting if a photograph were to appear sometime showing this airship over some city. But that was the closest to actually getting a photo of this object. And it was reported very straightforward. The gentleman said he borrowed his son's box camera at 6 o'clock in the morning, took a photo of this thing. And so, you know, what do you do with it? Either the man's lying, or he saw something and took a photograph.
And they didn't have Photoshop.
No, there was no Photoshop. And then you could mess with negatives, I guess, if you knew what you were doing. But it doesn't sound like something that a paper would make up, you know, that someone got a photograph of it and then come up with a sketch that appears in the paper. That just doesn't sound, especially a larger paper like Chicago, because these were the people that could make and break political careers. So your paper had to have a degree of credibility.
So you couldn't pull some of the stuff that some members of the media do today?
No, well, you couldn't pull the kind of stuff maybe a small town paper could. You know, they could get away with making up stuff like this and nobody cared. But when you are a major paper like, you know, Omaha or Chicago, and you're making up stuff, that's going to hurt your credibility. It's going to hurt your ability to be a player in the press world.
Also, if they get exposed, of course, there's always a competition. You know, it's not like it is today where large cities have one or at best two newspapers. You had competition, heavy competition. If you can kill the competitor off because they were publishing false stories, you can kill it with the advertisers.
Well, exactly. You got to imagine that you're an editor of one of these papers in Chicago, and someone comes in and say, hey, people keep saying they saw these lights in the sky. You have to make a decision. Am I going to cover this as a straight story, or am I going to disregard it? Or, you know, so those decisions had to be made quite consistently by people. So I can't believe all of them, you know, were taken in by it. Maybe a few of them were, but I think most of them really believed this was a legitimate story. I think people really expected this airship to land someplace and people to announce to the world that they had done it. And it just never happened, and that's the tragedy and the mystery of it.
Yeah, there was definitely something going on, though, at least in my estimation. There's just too many credible witnesses that were willing to go on the record and come forward, and too many, as you pointed out, credible newspaper accounts that covered the whole thing. I just can't, to this day, I can't understand why, you know, short of some sort of catastrophic crash that killed everybody involved, why the inventor of this thing didn't come forward and say, hey, surprise, it was me, what do you think of my new toy, hi people, you know, well,
what if the inventor was also the pilot, and he did crash?
Well, the other question I would have, wouldn't you find some wreckage? You'd think, after all these years, maybe one piece of wreckage, one prototype, plans, something, some evidence that these things were being developed.
Well, you know, I look at that issue in the book. I remember in 1897, most of the Midwest was heavily forested. It was still pretty wild. Something went down over Michigan, in those forests in Michigan, you know, you could lose a herd of rhinos in that forest, never find them.
Yeah, but what about when you start civilizing those areas over the years? Certainly the wreckage from 1897 would survive to 1960, 1980, 2011, wouldn't it?
Well, some of it would. Depends what it's made out of. If it's made out of bamboo, largely, or something like that,
yeah, canvas
would survive. But, you know, if the thing exploded in midair, so most of the bag is already gone, most of the structure of the ship is gone, the engines would survive in some capacity.
Okay, that raises more issues that have to be explored with,
okay.
Right, big questions with Jeff Danilek. on the 1897 Airship Mystery with Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
So here's what happened. I was placing an order online. The site went down. It just stopped responding. It took hours before it returned, but I'd already placed the order with another company. If your site goes down, you could lose business. And if you have a business or personal site, you'll want to know it's easy to run and it will stay online. At iWeb, your site is hosted on one of the most reliable networks in the world. Check it out, iWeb.com. That's iWeb.com. Fate Magazine provides true reports of the strange and unknown. Keep up with the latest on angels and miracles, psychic phenomena, ghosts, UFOs, life after death, and much, much more. To receive your free issue of Fate Magazine, call now at 1-800-728-2730 or visit their website at www.fatemag.com. That's 1-800-728-2730. What are you waiting for? Your fate awaits.
Gold isn't for you? Ted Anderson, president of Midas Resources, one of the world's premier gold and precious metal investing firms.
I get it.
You wouldn't buy gold if you believed that the government is doing a great job, that the Fed will stop handing out trillions of dollars like bailout candy, that Social Security would be there for you. That's not what's happening. You might even pass on gold if the stimulus package wouldn't fuel inflation, or that the dollar wouldn't lose value, or that your retirement would be secure. If all looks rosy to you, then now is not the time to buy gold. For the realists, there have never been more sobering reasons to diversify with gold. Since 2001, the U.S. dollar index has tanked 30%, while gold has risen 300%. Right now, savvy investors are adding gold to their portfolios. You should, too. Find out what they know. Call us, and I'll send you 10 reasons why gold will do very well, free. 800-686-2237. 800-686-2237. That's 800-686-2237.
Smokers, are you still smoking traditional cigarettes? Are you still smelling up your clothes and car interior, staining your teeth, and getting ashes everywhere? Why, when you could be smoking or vaping with e-cigarettes by LASIG. With LASIG e-cigarettes' revolutionary microelectronic technology, rechargeable battery, and unique replacement cartridges, you'll get all the satisfaction of smoking, but no smoking hazards. Choose from a wide variety of our new American-made Vaporeon e-liquid flavors at LASIG.com, spelled L-E-C-I-G.com, or call 870-518-4307. That's 870-518-4307. LASIG e-cigarettes for today's modern smoker. Warning: e-cigs may contain nicotine, an addictive substance known to the state of California to cause birth defects or cancer. Please be aware of the risks associated with e-cigs prior to use. You must be 18 years or older to purchase.
Big Berkey water filters are in high demand. Storable foods are also in high demand. BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com has always kept our focus on the Berkey water filter products. But increasingly, our customers have been asking for storable foods. After months of research, BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com now offers great-tasting, long-lasting, storable foods. These ready-to-eat meals are packed in airtight nitrogen pouches. All you do is just add water. And because they're sealed so well, they come with a 25-year shelf life. Combine our Berkey water filters, which are powerful enough to purify treated, untreated, or even stagnant pond water with our storable foods, and you have a winning combination. Remember, we offer free shipping on every order over $50, and GCN listeners receive 5% off all ceramic filter systems. Visit BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com or call 877-99-BERKEY. That's BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com or call 877-99-BERKEY today.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And if you'd like to catch up on past episodes, we have hundreds of shows for you to download direct from theparacast.com. That's theparacast.com. Or check us out at iTunes.
Aha, mysteries, big and small. And we're talking now with Jeff Danilek about the great airship mystery of 1897. And the question on the table here, well, you know, where's the wreckage? There had to be wreckage. There had to be blueprints. There had to be something.
Well, you know, in Colorado here, we've had airplanes go down over the years, and we even knew roughly where they went down. And 20, 30 years later, they still can't find the wreckage. And we even knew there was an airplane and where roughly where it went down. We still can't find it. So I think that it's not...
Yeah, but that's one area. That's a specific part of the country. There are a lot of parts like that, but if these things are flying over urban areas, there had to be something somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, it was flying occasionally over urban areas, but mostly over rural areas and fairly remote areas. Most of these reports came out of by farmers and people like that, ranchers. So if it did go down, it could have gone down into a lake. It could have been easily covered over with growth, and nobody ever found it. There was an airplane that was flying from France to America about the same time Lindbergh crossed the ocean, and then, it was called the Bluebird. And it left France. It had two pilots on it. They never found it. They think it made it to Nova Scotia and crashed there. And people have been looking for this thing for years and years and years, have never been able to find any evidence of this airplane.
Okay, we understand the aircraft crashes. What about the plans? What about someone leaving in a diary information for their heirs saying, hey, you know, before I died, I developed this airship and it flew, it crashed, it didn't make it. But here's the plans.
Here's my theory. My theory is that once this thing crashed, the banker behind this thing, the financier behind it, lost his investment. He also was putting himself up to lawsuits, essentially. I think it would have made more sense to just kind of hide the whole thing, hide the vouchers, all the stuff that he had with it. I say that this guy may have been from San Francisco. Maybe he did keep blueprints. Maybe he kept all kinds of working drawings in a chest somewhere in his attic. Well, what happened in San Francisco in 1906?
Okay, we understand.
Earthquake and fire, right?
Things got a little bit shook up.
Were burned. Yeah, it got destroyed in the 1906 fire and earthquake. It wouldn't take much.
Well, okay, but that's assuming it's San Francisco.
Right, that's assuming the guy's from San Francisco.
Why do we assume that? Why do you even come up with that kind of theory?
Right, well, the reason San Francisco makes sense is because that was really the wealth center of the West Coast at that time. There was no other city that came even close to the number of millionaires and people like that who lived there. You'd have to go to New York or Chicago to find a similar number of wealthy people.
So basically, if you're working in the Midwest or the West and you want someone to fund some kind of development, you go to San Francisco, you wire pallet in San Francisco and you say, give me $100,000, I want to build a spaceship or something.
Yep, that's what I would do. That's the place I would go. I mean, that's the major port. It's the major railhead. So all the supplies and stuff that you needed from the East Coast, you already have access to that. It just made sense to me that that's where it would start. Plus, at the time, California was still remote enough, most of it, that you could set up a dirigible hangar somewhere out in the woods and you would never find it. Not many people would see it. Unlike the East Coast, where, you know, if you tried to build anything, everybody would know about it.
So you're saying basically all this could have happened over this year period or other years, and we may never, ever be able to find any evidence of it except purely by accident, someone's attic, someone's basement.
Oh, sure. You know, and maybe the people that worked on it, some of them, maybe when they were older, they told stories to their kids about when they worked on the great airship. And the kid said, oh, you know, Grandpa's telling stories again.
Grandpa's in the silly phase. You know, he's a silly old man. And remember, too, people didn't live as long then. So Grandpa then might be 50 years old, not 75.
You know, and this lawyer could have sworn them all to silence, to secrecy. Listen, you say anything about what we were working on here and, you know, I'll go after you, you know, legally.
Looking at society then. Now, nowadays, when great developments occur, aircraft, it's always the government. Or almost always the government. Mm-hmm. What about the government of 1897, the military? Were they interested in scientific stuff?
Yeah, they were always looking at technology, but they didn't build anything themselves. You know, everything that the military came up with, some civilian had invented it. The government just didn't fund these things back then. They didn't have the resources. If you came up with something interesting, they wanted to see what you were doing, and they might buy it from you, but they weren't going to develop.
It's kind of like some political movements nowadays would say, the government should do nothing, we should hand it off to private industry. It's like going back 110 years in time.
Well, yeah, private industry was really all there was until recent times. Actually, if you think about it, even today, the government doesn't really make anything. Everything that we put into space, all of the weapons that we buy, those are all built by private contractors. So even today, the government doesn't.
Wait a minute. The government's sure making a lot of people angry.
Yeah, it makes people mad, but it doesn't make stuff.
Right. What it does is it contracts with private industry to build it. The design is funded. The prototypes are funded, whatever.
Yeah, today especially, the government will go ahead and give out contracts to build something to a particular specifications. But in the early years, they would just shop around like anyone else. And if somebody had built an airplane or something that looked like it had military applications, the government would go ahead and purchase them. And then they might, at some point, specify a type of airplane they wanted, and then they would have a bunch of different companies competing for it, and then they would purchase from whichever one won the competition.
Okay, looking back at 1897 and the airships, it sort of erupts in 1897, although maybe there were some glimmers of other things happening before then, and that stops completely?
Mm-hmm. Pretty much. There was a few stories going all the way into the late summer of 1897, but most of them pretty well came to an end about April or May of that year.
All right, so it was just a few months and it's gone. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. That's what leads me to believe that this is a real event. Were it a mythology or some kind of a legend, it would have legs of its own that would take it for years, probably. But it just, you know, it died as quickly as it began, which suggests a real story behind all of the reports.
So conventional science, what do they say about 1897, if anything?
Well, they usually either assume it was a hoax, newspaper stories, or it was mass hysteria. People heard about these lights. They went out. They saw something in the sky. They got excited and called the paper and told them that they saw an airship. Certainly, that was a degree of that. But one thing I point out in my book is that people in 1897 were probably more aware of what was in the night sky than we are today. Remember, there wasn't a lot of lights back then, so people had a really good view at night. They understood, you know, they could see the Milky Way. They knew Venus. They knew Saturn. They were very aware of what was up in the night.
So if they saw something, they wouldn't mistake it for Venus. They knew what Venus was. We had pollution, obviously, in the 1890s,
sure.
But people,
yeah, they
there was
knew
no TV
what,
set.
What Venus was.
No radio.
Exactly. What people do today who aren't really watching, you know, they don't know much about astronomy or the stars, they get a very bright Venus low on the horizon, and they're driving their car through the woods, and this thing looks like it's following them.
Well, I'll tell you what, someone's going to follow us if we don't do this break with Jeff Danilek.
Okay.
You don't know about those people who follow us. With Gene and Chris, you're following
the Paracast.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Ray Perkins, a reclusive veteran burned out from the Gulf War, lives tortured by relentless, perplexing nightmares. Nightmares of a horrific battle in deep space and of a mysterious woman suffering in agony for her devastated world. A woman not yet born, calling across centuries to him. Then, a coincidence leads him to his destiny, his chance to alter the universe. Attack of the Rockoids. The former fiction editor for Star Wars and Indiana Jones, Robert Simpson, writes, "The soul of the novel Attack of the Rockoids lies in its heart and passion for building a convincing tale of a love that spans a galaxy. A thrilling story. Attack of the Rockoids is available now. Read a sample chapter and get a special discount off of the cover price at our website, rockoids.com. That's R-O-C-K-O-I-D-S. Attack of the Rockoids, a novel in the grand science fiction tradition.
I have bought a few bottles of Heart and Body Extract and have to say that it certainly does work.
That's what Jack from Michigan had to say after his experience with heart pain and what he did to treat it with Heart and Body Extract.
I actually had a huge heart flutter. I was also having some edema around my ankles and very worrisome clot in my right leg that would happen from time to time while I was trying to sleep.
Heart and Body Extract is all natural with no negative side effects. It will help repair or correct past problems associated with the heart and body circulation.
After my second bottle of Heart and Body Extract, all problems are now gone.
Order at hvextract.com or call 866-295-5305.
I ordered a third bottle of Heart and Body Extract for maintenance, as I want to keep everything working.
Order Heart and Body Extract at 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract for a long and healthy life.
Hi, this is Alex Jones. This holiday season, more than half of our nation is in need of help due to the shattered economy. So now is the time to express the holiday spirit more than ever. Consider helping those you love with the most important gift, a supply of delicious, easy-to-fix, and very storable foods from eFoodsDirect.com. Their holiday gift and family packs start at $99 for a 16-day supply, while their five-week supply of quick and easy-to-fix meals includes a personal backpack in case of a grab-and-go emergency. Order their combo gift pack, and you'll save hundreds, plus get free shipping on your entire order. Call eFoods today at 800-409-5633 or visit them online at eFoodsDirect.com/Alex to find the special. That's 800-409-5633 or eFoodsDirect.com/Alex. You can bet your life on eFoods Direct.
Warning, this content is powerful and may cause others to reject your knowledge. If you want to know what happened to America, if you like cutting-edge information, if you need to convince someone that something different than what they believe is actually taking place, and to experience the true history of America you won't find anywhere else, get the new book, Satan's Show. Satan's Show is a hard-hitting look at what many know as the Antichrist and proof of a mind-control agenda. Learn how America was tricked into entering World War I and get over 9 hours of audio and over 700 reliable web links. Satan's Show is available in ebook and audio downloads. Click the special offer for $14.99 and you'll receive both, plus Operation Northwoods on audio free with purchase. Download today at satansshow.com. You will be shocked. You will be amazed. SatansShow.com.
Hi, this is Ted Phillips, listening to the Paracast, and it's as good as it gets, believe me.
With Gene and Chris, you're in the Paracast. And no, to answer the question of what we were talking about before this part started, I was not singing, nor do I pretend to sing about anything except for my supper so I can get something to eat. We're talking about the great 1897 airship mystery with Jeff Danilek. Maybe it wasn't a mystery. Maybe it was just somebody really smart, some smart people developing airships, and that was it. And the invention came and went, a singular event, and then within a few years, we had real heavier-than-air craft. But do you think if there was any psychic element to this, this served as the precursor again, the announcement heralding the future development in the near few years?
Yeah, I think people were really excited about technology back then. Today we're fairly lackadaisical about it. We have come to, you know, we expect so much of it now that we don't even think twice. But back then, all this stuff was, gee whiz, isn't that cool? So people were aware that it was only a matter of time before man learned to fly. And they were anticipating that. And, of course, balloons had been around since the 1700s. You know, the first hot air balloon flew in 1783. So people were already aware that man had flown before. But in terms of heavier-than-air flight, that was something that was still the things that made it possible.
Mercedes, then. They invented the car, what, in 1889 or something?
Well, they had some actual experimental electric cars back in the late 1880s. But, yeah, you're right. The first real true cars didn't come out until about 1897, 1898. That period of time, right, in between, say, 1895 and 1905 was an amazing period of growth and just this burst of creativity all over the world. Aviation, submarines, everything you can think of really got going about that time.
If you didn't want to live to 45.
Yeah, and if you didn't want clean water, clean air, stuff like that, you know, then that was the time to live.
Well, okay, there is that. Not that I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
Chris, let's explore the edges of this.
Well, when I look at waves of activity that seem to be out of place, out of time, one of the things that I always am most interested in is the effect that it has on culture. Looking, you know, researching this subject to the extent that you have you looked into the repercussions of this airship wave in the perception of the public? Did it lead to a series of books, or was there any sort of effect of it reverberating through culture? You mentioned before that if it had been some sort of hoax or fanciful thinking, that we would have seen it, as you put it, grow legs and continue on and on. But the fact that it seems to have just dropped off is interesting to me, and I'm wondering if there were any effects of this particular sighting wave in the culture in terms of literary works, or, you know, we're even getting into the early movies within 10 years at that point. So... just, you know, did you stumble on anything? Did you see any outbreaks of these types of events in other countries, for instance?
No, I do not recall. Really. It seemed to be a uniquely American phenomena. And I think that people didn't see it as being anything that amazing. You remember, you're right. It was right on the heels of Zeppelin's airships flying in 1900. So there wasn't really enough time for it to develop a mythology, and it wasn't, to most people's way of thinking, it wasn't as big an event as we would probably make it out to be today. I also remember that this was kind of in the aftermath of H.G. Wells and Orson, all their stuff came out, the War of the Worlds, so people were already used to thinking in terms of outer space and technological advances of all kinds. So anyway, that's one reason I thought that this was more likely a terrestrial event, just because people did not seem to blow it out of proportion as much as we would do today.
Yeah. What about UFO sightings in general? Do we have much activity during that period? I'm speaking of UFOs separate from the airships.
Unidentified flying objects. Well, there was very few reports that I have found from that era. There are actually some interesting accounts from, you know, Roman days, you know, the ancient Roman Empire, the Greeks. Some of these people have reported seeing things in the sky. But in terms of the Old West and America specifically, I didn't see a lot of that. And part of the reason for that probably is just the remoteness of the region. It was, you know, you saw something like that, reported it, the chances are it wasn't going to get very far. Probably just, you know, your own local paper would report it, maybe. And that was going to be as far as it got. It usually wasn't picked up and spread around the country like things are today. We have a sighting in, you know, in Arizona at Phoenix, you know, and within 3 hours everybody knows about it and it's on YouTube. Back then you had a sighting and, it would be weeks before it was reported, and probably nobody would care after that.
Well, I was mentioning before you came on, there was a sighting this week in Scottsdale, Arizona, which is northeast of Phoenix, as many of our listeners know, and it was at a high school football game. People took movies of it. Didn't look like anything more than some lights in the sky, but listen, you know, look how quick that gets out.
Oh, exactly. And also there was some video taken at an NFL game, I think a couple of weeks
sure.
ago. It was just a quick shot of a couple of things streaking by that nobody really saw at the time they shot it. But, you know, when they looked back over the footage, they could see that something is definitely there. And, to this day, we still don't know what it was. But those things could be all over the place.
Well, I have talked and other people have talked about the so-called publicity flap, which is a UFO case gets some prominence, people start looking at the skies and see more things, the press reports stories they would not otherwise have reported because of the fact that there are other news events, and suddenly you have a lot of stories, but in the end it's not necessarily that the signal is louder, but that we see it for a while and then we forget about it and the flap disappears, not because there were more cases, but because we were talking about them.
Well, you know,
yeah,
that's
like this
possible.
Summer.
That's possible, but I kind of disregard or discount this idea that if one person reports a UFO, suddenly everybody's seeing them. You know, we are sophisticated enough that we're so used to aircraft and helicopters and things like that that we know largely when we see something unusual.
Yes, but the other thing is, if you see it in the papers or you hear it on TV or you see it on YouTube, the sighting you already had, you're more inclined to report. You figure, well, they're not going to laugh about me. You've got these other people reporting it.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That will bring people out to talk about things that they wouldn't otherwise talk about. I've noticed that in my own research, that when I talk to people about their experiences, after a while, they will start confiding stuff in me that they probably wouldn't volunteer up front. And it's just like ghost stories. Everybody has a ghost story. You know, they may say, I don't believe in ghosts, but as soon as you start asking them, do you know anybody who's seen one, they always have a story. And I think it's a lot of times the same way with UFOs.
They got the sighting, they took it in stride, or, well, with pilots, they don't want to report a UFO. You remember that scene in Close Encounters of the Third Kind where the air traffic controller says, okay, do you want to report a UFO? And he says, no, don't want to bother. They don't want to get involved.
Yeah, that's actually probably a pretty accurate.
Oh, sure.
What actually happens. And they are starting to come forward a little bit more nowadays. They're not quite as fearful, but I mean, back then people really could lose their jobs, coming out and reporting.
They still can.
I think you can. It's a little bit harder. You do have some legal ramifications and things if you fire someone for something like that.
Then you go on cable news and you say, here's my lawyer. He was fired because he saw something strange in the sky. This is a travesty. The airline gets bad publicity, and they decide, you know what, we can't fire that person. That's what happens. That's the danger. Because no matter what you do, everybody will hear about it. Just like you're hearing this. We have Jeff Danilek. You're in
the Paracast.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio?
Something more important.
Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Graphic Converter is the image manipulation tool for the rest of us. It does not use any database. You get full control of all your files. Want to view the images of a folder? Drag it into Graphic Converter, and a powerful browser opens up to show your image files. You could use it for slideshows. You could use it to import images from digital cameras or from scanners. Need to do some image editing? You can do that too in Graphic Converter. Also, print catalogs. Convert from so many formats, I can't even list them. Download now to see if Graphic Converter is good for you, like 1.5 million other users. Guess what? You could save money when you buy Graphic Converter. Use the coupon code NIGHTOWL. Use the coupon code NIGHTOWL to get a special price for Graphic Converter. Go to LemkeSoft.com. That's LemkeSoft.com. LemkeSoft.com. LemkeSoft.com.
Survival of the fittest. In any and all situations, survival is your number one priority. That requires being tough and thinking smart. And the folks at Freeze Dry Guy are going to help you do just that. They have the long-range patrol ration entrees, what they call the brick pack. When you're in survival mode, it is absolutely the best item for your survival pack or bug-out bag. You can go farther, faster, and carry more food with the LRP cold weather ration entrees. Not only do these long-lasting, durable entrees help sustain you or your family through the harshest environment or situation, they are by far the most delicious of their kind. No contest. With a variety of tasty entrees, you can't beat the LRP brick packs. Let Freeze Dry Guy help you in your survival situations. Go to freezedryguy.com. That's freezedryguy.com. Or call 866-404-3663. That's 866-404-FOOD.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light Systems system today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
As we age, we lose both strength and muscle mass. Undamaged whey protein from grass-fed cows is nature's most powerful food to gain back lost muscle. Virtually all whey protein powders or drinks have been damaged during processing or are high in sugar. This damaged whey causes a significant loss in the ability of the body to build new muscle proteins. The high sugar content will stop all the benefits of your growth hormone from causing muscle repair. By giving your body easily absorbed, undamaged whey, free of added sugar, you may be able to gain back lost muscle and strength. One World Whey is truly undamaged whey protein powder free of added sugar. Both young and elderly are reporting increases in muscle strength and size without any additional exercise. Go to oneworldwhey.com. That's oneworldwhey.com to read or hear some impressive testimonies to this effect. Or call 888-988-3325. That's 888-988-3325.
This is Kurt Seven, the author of UFO Mysteries, and you're listening to the Paracast.
So as we continue, we're traveling back and forth through time from 1897 and beyond to see what was going on. You've been covering the paranormal scene for a number of years. And the question
is back to about 2003, 2004 is when I first started doing this kind of this gig full time.
Sure, but why did you start originally?
Well, you know, I guess I've always been curious about stuff like this. When I was a kid, I was into the Bermuda Triangle, Bigfoot, all that stuff. And it never really left me. As I got older, I was still interested in this stuff, and I still am today. And I just found that there was a lack of objectivity in this field. And I thought, well, you know, instead of complaining about that, why don't I go ahead and write my own books? And fortunately, I was able to find publishers to pick them up and things like that. And one thing led to another, and all of a sudden, I became a quote-unquote expert in the field just by the mere fact that I, you know, put a few books out and people read them.
What is your background in terms of professional writing and otherwise?
Well, I have no credentials really as a professional writer. I'm self-taught. I'm a graphic designer by training, a Navy veteran. Just started writing in my late 30s, early 40s is when I started taking it up, just kind of as a hobby, a relaxation. And I think I have an ability, though, that to look at something from both sides without necessarily discounting or believing anything. And I think that's what's rare in this field and why we need more people to do that kind of thing.
I'm looking at your catalog, and I'm finding some really fascinating titles. And I want to throw just a couple of other things at your way in addition to 1897, and that is UFOs, The Great Debate. Now, What areas do you cover in that book, and what kind of conclusions do you reach?
Well, I spend a lot of time looking at the whole question of reverse engineering alien technologies. You know, how possible is that? Is that something that really could be done with our level of scientific ability today? So I spend a lot of time looking at that issue. I come to the conclusion that we really couldn't reverse engineer these things with our level of technology any more than a 19th century scientist could reverse engineer a nuclear submarine.
Or an iPhone.
Or an iPhone or a wristwatch. You know what I mean? If you don't have that technology base already in place, you can't do it. You can reverse something that's similar to what you already have. You could take a car from England and, you know, figure out how they put it together and make one like it in America. But that's a comparable technology.
Or reverse engineer software, for example, do the same thing. So you don't think even if there was a Roswell crash, that anybody was able to decode anything from that technology.
No, I don't. I don't think it's possible, first of all. And I don't think that any civilization would be stupid enough to let us get our hands on that technology. They would have to have ways of recovering it or destroying it in situ.
You mean big radar units in New Mexico weren't the cause of the Roswell crashes, plural?
Now, don't get me started on Roswell. That's an area that drives me nuts.
You know what? Okay, so in as much as it drives you nuts, why does it drive you nuts?
Because there is so little objectivity in this area. Nobody will listen to other explanations, or if they do, they just ignore them. And I think there's perfectly good explanations for what happened in July.
The present company excluded with the nobody thing here. We've looked at Roswell every which way but loose. Nick Redfern, one of our former co-hosts, wrote probably one of the most amazing books about the case, Body Snatchers in the Desert. But we agree with you that Roswell should dry up and blow away or something. Continue. I didn't mean to interrupt.
Okay, but that's a good point here. So do you think it was balloons or a secret weapon or something?
I think it was the Mogul balloons. I'm a veteran myself, and I've been in the military for 8 years, and I know kind of how they work. And they are secretive. They keep a lot of stuff away from people. But when they do kind of come forward, they generally don't make stuff up. They'll declassify something and say, okay, here's what it was. And then you can either believe it or not believe it. But I just don't buy off on this whole government conspiracy, let's hide all this stuff. You just couldn't do it. There's too many people involved. It's been how many years now? It's like over 60, 70 years almost. How many thousands of people would have to come across this wreckage and these alien bodies and all this stuff as part of the process and still keep it all a secret? It's just none of it holds together for me.
What about all these interviews they're doing? They're always finding people who seem to have memories of their own or those of a near relative. Now, the thing I always worry about here, whatever they want to say, is that you're going through 50, 60 years of time. You live an entire life. The culture has got to alter what you remember of your youth or your early 20s, your early adulthood. So how do we know what has colored what they're telling us now? We don't have the hard evidence.
No, and even the eyewitness evidence, there's really very few eyewitnesses. I don't think there's any living eyewitnesses. I think Jesse Marcel's son is still alive, and he saw the wreckage.
He touched the wreckage.
Which looks suspiciously, what looks suspiciously like a Mogul balloon. But the other thing I noticed about this story is that some of the original elements of it, the bodies that were seen being taken away and the different groups that came upon the flying saucer and all this stuff, turns out to have been hoaxed. Even though it's been discredited, the story itself is kind of woven into the rest of the story and still stays there. So people will still, these elements are still there in the story, even though the person who originally told them has been discredited. And it's almost like people so badly want this to be true that they don't care what the source of the information is. As long as it fits that paradigm, they're going to incorporate it into the story. And it just keeps growing and growing. Now there's 3 crash sites in Roswell. There's not just the one at Corona, but there was other 2 places where pieces of the wreckage came down and bodies were found, et cetera, et cetera.
And there's also Aztec, New Mexico, and there's a book that supposedly is going to be out one of these years. It's what we call a vaporware book from Scott Ramsey, and he's been on the show. He's a decent guy. He's sincere in his research. He's working with Frank Warren and other people. The question I have is, though, okay, you have the evidence. Get the book out. Let's see what it contains. Let's evaluate it, good, bad, or ugly.
Mm-hmm. And it just never comes out. You know, there's the Disclosure Project. These people, they had this big to-do in Washington where they carted out some celebrities. They said, you know, we've got the goods on the government and nothing, you know. And they just never come forward and produce this stuff. They say they have it. They know people who have it, but they never really do.
So your contention is, Jeff, that there is no silence group, that regardless of the reality of UFOs or lack thereof, the government probably doesn't know anything much about it, and they're not keeping anything a secret other than stuff that might reflect on national security.
By and large, that would be my position. Yeah, I do believe that they probably know some things that they haven't released in terms of maybe they've got some...
All that gun camera footage.
Gun camera footage, stuff like that, sure.
Yeah, and all the NORAD tracks.
You had to also think about this for a second, that we may have caught it on certain types of satellites that are top secret in themselves. And by revealing this information, we actually reveal the capabilities of these satellites. So that would be another reason why we may not be able to talk about stuff. But the military is not particularly good with keeping secrets any more than anyone else is. Because people, once they get out of the military, there's nothing to prevent them from talking about what they saw, what they experienced. It's very difficult.
Well, security oaths are security oaths. I mean, if you sign a security oath, it's for, in perpetuity, unless otherwise rescinded.
Of course, if someone's very old, it doesn't matter. What are they going to say? I'm 85 years old. Go pick me up. Make my day.
Sure. Absolutely. There's a lot of people who, if they really knew something, they're going to tell you. And the government's probably not going to do much about it. I worked on top secret projects with Lockheed Martin. I don't talk about them, but I think if I did, I don't think anybody would come to my door one day and
you don't want to chance it, do you? This is the PowerCast. We let it all hang out.
Come on.
Well,
lay
it on us, man.
To be honest with you, top secret stuff is boring, okay? There's not much really that's that interesting. I don't even see why it's secret, half of it, but that's just me.
We almost got him. Top secret stuff, this show's going to be a secret if we don't do this break. We have Jeff Danilek. Right. We start out with the 1897 airship mystery. We're focusing more general on UFOs, a lot more to cover. And you're hearing Gene and Chris because you must inevitably be in
the Paracast.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN. Great talk radio starts here.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. If you'd like to listen to GCN programs on the go, I have great news. GCN has created a Droid and iPhone application, and it's free. Just as easy as going to GCNlive.com, click on the banner, and download. Before you know it, you'll be listening to your favorite hard-hitting GCN shows, live or on demand, right on your Droid or iPhone, 24/7 and on the go. So download the Droid and iPhone app free by clicking on the banner at GCNlive.com. Thanks again for listening to GCNlive.com. Again, that's GCNlive.com.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. Have you ever wondered why banks, stockbrokers, investment advisors won't talk about gold IRAs? They've been available since 1986, yet the financial industry won't recognize the value of gold for your retirement. Gold has outperformed paper investments, yet no word about IRAs. If you would like to have gold for your retirement, call 800-686-2237. Don't get left behind by rising inflation and low returns. Call 800-686-2237. Secure your future and call 1-800-686-2237.